Blog Talk Radio.
Smart Sound.
Good morning and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, Studio A, and Mr. Edwards, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards in Studio B. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. It got kind of chilly.
Good morning, Mr. Allen.
Yeah.
What you got? What we got, man? What's happening here in Indianapolis?
A lot of craziness is going on in the news, and I'm looking at different headlines here on the Star Tribune, Pioneer Press, and Washington Post, and so I think we're going to have a few things to talk about this morning.
Okay, go ahead and introduce us. Oh, by the way, let me just indicate this breaking story from Fox, looks like News and New York Times. On top of a story here with regards to the attorney general's race here in Minnesota. In fact, I think you talked to Washington, our Fox News, a couple months ago, conversation with them. They were doing some research on different aspects, and I guess things have really, exploded here with the decision yesterday by a court referee to allow Congressman Keith Ellison's divorce process to be reopened. And New York Times and them are now looking at this is kind of peculiar, but looking at a homicide, a murder in January 2000 of a woman by the name of Geraldine Williams. We had mentioned that name a couple weeks ago. No one seemed to know anything, but now the New York Times does, but we'll get into that a little later on in the program. A woman kidnapped and murdered just outside of the women's corrections facility at Shakopee, Minnesota. Man, I'm telling you, a lot of stuff coming out. But what you got, Don? What are we gonna open up with?
Well, I just was looking at the web, and a student here out here, not too far from where we are, and I'm just getting back to that story from Rogers, Minnesota. He tweeted about a teacher in his class, and they suspended him, Mr. Edwards. This is in Rogers, Minnesota, young white dude. Just made a tweet, a comment about the teacher, so they suspended him. His parents and he went back into court, and he won a $425,000 settlement on this week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, the school districts struggle about freedom of speech, the Constitution, the First Amendment, and they always say, well, there's consequences for your exercising your First Amendment rights. And it seems like there were some good consequences for him because he's going to walk away with $425,000.
Yeah, now does she pay that, or does the Rogers School District pay that?
It was after the school, it was on the school district. So it's on the school district. So
the good taxpayers up there in Rogers, Minnesota. Yeah, a lot of our good police officers live up there in Rogers. Yeah, it's a pretty safe, pretty white community up there. Wow, $425,000,
yeah.
Huh? Nice chunk of money, man.
Yeah, $425,000. And I had another one because, Mr. Edwards, there was the Minneapolis, my internet in the studio is running so slow this morning, but the former head of the St. Paul Human Rights Department, and I want to get this correct for our listeners. Our intern pulling up a story to get it to me. Oh, here we go. Thank you. Thank you very much, Kathy Jo. Former St. Paul Human Rights Director walks away with $250,000 after accusing police of sabotaging her oversight. So she's been there.
Yeah, I saw that in the Pioneer Press about 4 weeks ago when the announcement was being made. Yeah. Yeah, that's part of her settlement, and she walks away over there as the head of the St. Paul. They call it human rights over there. It's just like over here in Minneapolis here, civil rights. But yeah, a lot of money being paid out, man. You know, in a YouTube, Me Too, you know, fake news society, I tell you, folks getting away with a lot of money. Hey, I don't know what's happening.
By the way,
phone lines are open, 347-426. 3904, New York Times. Fox News looking at the homicide, the death, the murder of an African-American woman named Jolene Williams, 58 years old at the time that she was murdered. I don't know, man. Some finger pointing going on. Yeah, I hope our politicians get everything under control. Had you ever heard about that case before, the Williams case?
Well, when we talked about it here on the radio quite a few times over the years, actually, and we do have it in our archives here. I mean, you had brought it up because you were more knowledgeable about what was going on with that. And it was, it is listed on our archives, but Mr. Edwards, to be honest with you, no one else is talking about it. No one else saying anything.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? It's just fake news.
So
we made it up. Not because I'm aware of the people that have been going over to Ramsey County, because that's where the case originated, if you will, with Miss Williams in Ramsey County. And I know for a fact been going over there getting access. It's not as difficult as it is it would be for the divorce proceedings, if you know what I mean. Have been going over there asking and trying to look at the files, if you will. So there are folks out there that know about the Geraldine Williams, 58 years of age at the time of her murder on January 2nd, 2000, just as we were going into the new millennium. But hey, if you know, nobody lately doesn't know anything about it, though, I have to tell you a couple names of a couple people that have called into our program over the years. Their names have emerged, but we'll deal with it, you know, whenever it explodes. But I know the New York Times had a reporter in here last week taking a look at the case file on Geraldine Williams, if you will. And shot and killed execution style by two white. Let's admit all that black on black stuff. In fact, one of the guys was, as we exclusively reported, one of the murderers. Mark is his first name for those that are out there, and particularly for a couple that folks that called into our program over the years. Mark was murdered inside the Stillwater Penitentiary about 3 years later on a contract killing. Can you believe that? Because somebody put a contract on him and they killed him inside the penitentiary. Woo! Lord have mercy. His brother is still out and alive. Now his brother's doing some talking about the attorney of record of that particular case. But anyways, what's going to happen on this divorce thing? I'm not understanding. What do they think they'll find in there? What do you think?
Well, Mr. Edwards, before we get into that, we have a caller. I'd like to get them on the line and see what they're talking about.
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. What's your question?
Hello, good morning.
Hello, caller. Good morning,
yes.
How are you?
How you doing there?
Doing great, sir.
Yes, I have a question.
What can we do for you, caller, early this morning on a Saturday? Nice day. They got the sun out. Any questions?
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Allen. Mr. Allen, I have a question for you.
Okay, I'm right here. Go ahead, sir.
You know, you expound on the Mrs. Alexander, and she explained, I believe, in her paperwork that there was some gaslighting going on with Mr. Ellis and her.
I'm sorry, sir. What is gaslighting for our international audience? What gaslighting is what, sir?
Well, I wanted Mr. Allen to expound on what is gaslighting, and if he could maybe go into
I'm sorry, sir.
And get his definition.
Gaslighting in a relationship is kind of firing things up. It's the abuser lacks understanding or is declined to share emotions. It's starting stuff behind sex, behind relationships. Gaslighting, for example. Your girlfriend is going out and you don't want her to go out. So you say, well, you're going out too, but you're going out with another female. That lights up the whole situation. That's one example of gaslighting in a relationship. So some manipulation, brainwashing that causes victim, the victim in gaslighting is not sure ever where the relationship is, ever.
Okay.
So it's an ongoing mental state of psychological boxing gloves and abuse.
Okay, now, Mr. Allen, could you expound on, are these the tactics that Mr. Ellis was using in his relationships?
Allegedly.
You know, that's what's being said. Just a minute so we don't get ourselves in trouble. You said Ellis or Ellison?
Ellison. Keith Ellison.
Oh, okay. Because I'm not quite sure where you're going here with this one, because you asked about gaslighting, and now we have the name of the congressman and gentleman who is wanting to be attorney general. Okay, thank you. So I just kind of wanted to be clear, because I'm kind of in the fault here. But go ahead,
Mr.
Chairman.
Go ahead. I think I know what he's talking about, because Ms. Monahan has stated that there was a lot of gaslighting going on in her relationship with Congressman Ellison. And she actually had publicly talked about that and has written that, and it was quoted by several articles that news agencies that interviewed her, and it was in the article. And so as far as their personal relationship, I wasn't around him. I never heard any gaslighting, and all I'm doing is reading what you're reading, sir, in the different articles that are coming out.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean, like, he would use, like, domestic surveillance in his gaslighting? You know, because that can go a whole different way, a whole different lot of ways that gaslighting can go on. Are these some of the tactics that Mr. Congressman Keith Ellis has been using?
According to what everyone's reading, including yourself, Ms. Monahan had stated that, and she was the first one to use that term. You had referenced Amy Alexander. Amy Alexander has not used that term up to this point, but she did on several occasions via telephone. I was talking to her on the phone, said that there was some problems, some huge issues, and there's a police report to go with it.
Let me just kind of clear here, because for our national and international audience, now we started out here talking a little bit about a decision yesterday to reopen the Congressman Ellison's divorce proceedings, if you will. I guess that's on appeal as we speak. Then we got into this Karen Monahan, who is an Iranian national, and now we're hearing about a Miss Alexander. Now, Ms. Alexander, caller, I mean, could you give us a little bit more clarity here? Ms. Alexander is who? I mean, who is she? Is she here in Minnesota? Or what? She's not the woman that now lives in England, is she? And Don, you say you talked to her just recently? Well, that's important.
Yeah,
that's
an
important piece of news, because no one can catch up to her. They say that she's a mystery woman. In fact, the London Times was saying that the MI5 was conducting a search for this Miss Alexander because federal authorities wanted to talk to her, and then some attorneys wanted to talk to her about the. And I don't know, sir, if you would even know about this case, the Geraldine Williams murder in 2000. So I'm trying to keep up on the chessboard here, sir.
Well, according to what I'm understanding, Mr. Ellis was basically fleecing some of his so-called clients for money, and some of those clients, I guess, they didn't get the full representation because Mr. Ellison, I believe, he didn't have his license to practice law in the state of Minnesota.
Mm. Yeah, well, I don't know. Mr. Allen, maybe you can address that. I'm sorry, you said a license. He didn't have a license. He has a law degree, but he didn't have a license. Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yes, because I believe that when his wife brought him up on some serious charges, I believe that's when Mr. Ellison lost his license, because for a long time there, Mr. Ellison was rolling around North Minneapolis like he was the Johnny Cochran of the North Side, and he was thinking that he can carry the whole North Side in his briefcase.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So let me ask you, caller, where did you notice that at? And you had made a statement, a very serious statement, that on this show, we have to address for clarity that he was fleecing his client. Now, this is the first that I've heard of that. Do you have any examples, or can you share with our listeners in this breaking news?
Yes, I'm going to share that with you. Yes, I'm going to share something with you that I witnessed personally. I was over at the Urban League shortly thereafter he became a congressman, and it was on a Saturday, and Mr. Ellison was in his office, and I was there in the lobby, and there was this African woman who came in, her father, and her husband, and the young lady was crying profusely, and she stated clearly that she just spoke with Congressman Ellison. He was supposed to be handling a case for them, for their father, who was falsely accused of some fumbling with some kid that, through their babysitting agency from some Caucasian people, and they obtained Mr. Ellison. They gave him $3,000 up front, and on this particular Saturday, he wanted them to bring some more money. And just as the ladies, just as the young lady came into the Urban League, Mr. Ellison was taking the back door out of the Urban League, and Kim Ellison was driving the getaway car.
Oh, wow. Well, wow. So that was a situation, as my colleague Mr. Allen asked you about, do you have any knowledge of any fleecing of the congressman at the time that he was a practicing attorney? And you say this happened at the St. Paul Urban League?
No, at the Minneapolis Urban League on Plymouth.
Okay, the Minneapolis Urban League. Yeah, and you said something about his office. That's right, the congressman does have his Minneapolis office in the Urban League of Minneapolis, which is right there for our national, international audience, right there on Plymouth and Penn, right across the street from the Gore Construction World Headquarters. Yeah.
Sir?
Okay. Any other observations, sir, because we're trying to get a feel for what the heck is going on and what is it that is in that those divorce proceedings that looks like that a court may uphold the right to open that case file, if you will. All right, sir. Do you have any questions for this caller in addition, Mr. Ellis?
No, I don't. Do you have anything in closing, caller?
No, I don't. I just would like to understand that if Mr. Ellis has been operating like this here, it seems like when he was state's representative, he shouldn't have never become a state's representative. He should have been stopped a long time ago. The investigation on him should have came out when he was running for state's representative.
You mean for the Minnesota State House of Representatives back
that
in 2004 or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, him and Mrs. Neva Walker were the only two at the time.
Neva Walker, okay. Who was in the district in South Minneapolis, she now resides in San Francisco, as I understand it. Okay. All right. That issue of policing, the reason I asked that question, sir, because we had reported something similar by an attorney in the case of, again, a woman by the name of Geraldine Williams, who apparently no one remembers or even knows the Williams situation. She was shot and killed execution style just outside of the Shakopee Women's Facility. But everyone says they don't know or remember, or they don't have the recollection, yet all these people have gone over to St. Paul looking in the record. So, all right, sir, appreciate it. Thank you for the call.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, I don't know what that is. But, of course, you know, when the New York Times and them and Fox News Washington and Fox News Minneapolis, because someone has said to me that the young lady's name at KMSP? She's worked on a number of cases dealing with the African-American community. I think, Don, we had her on the program one time. Iris came here from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
Yeah, they tell me that Iris is working supposedly on this Williams case, but it doesn't appear to be a Williams case. I mean, because, you know, everybody basically looks the other way. Any other calls, Don? If we got any calls, get them on here. Early
no,
Saturday,
we don't have any calls. Well,
we've already set
things
actually, on fire.
Actually, we do. We do have another
go
caller.
Ahead, go ahead.
Call. You're live on the air. Go ahead. What's your question or comment?
Okay, yes, this is Lisa calling into the show. So thanks for taking my call. Hey, so my question is, because I was actually listening to last week's show. Well, my question, because you guys are always talking about Congressman Keith Ellison, and I want to find out if you're using the show to try and discredit the congressman so that he will not get voted for, or are you gonna have callers call in to show what he has done to benefit the community, starting all the way back from when we had those race riots over there on Plymouth Avenue, or the gang truce, or the predatory lending practices that took place in the state that took away the middle class blacks, or the stop, or the when the police are pulling people over, when Congressman raised awareness of that, and all the things he has done for people who was not able to afford a lawyer or an attorney when he was an attorney. I'm trying to figure out what is the goal, because if we want to promote voting and vote for our own people, we want our people in office, it is about holding him accountable. We should do that. But if we're working to operate to constantly destroy each other, I'm trying to figure out what's the goal here, and that's all I want to know. What's going on with the Congressman in this show?
Well, if I may, let me just start out. I'm pretty sure Mr. Edwards has a mouthful on this, too. Here goes the deal. When we start treating elected officials like celebrities, we lose. There is no successful outcomes. I had several encounters with Congressman Ellison's office just regarding veterans that were never solved, that was basically blown off. I didn't pay him for attorney. I went in as a U.S. Army honorably discharged veteran who was having trouble with the VA system here in Minnesota. And it wasn't just me. There was thousands in the 5th Congressional District that was logging complaints with him. You know, you can ask Lisa Delgado. You know her well. You can ask her.
You went to a Democrat as a Republican to ask a Democrat to support your effort?
Wait. See, now you got life twisted. He's the congressman for the 5th Congressional District. There was no Republican congressman for me to go to. So if he's the congressman, I don't care if he's yellow, green, Democrat, Republican, independent, whoever the 5th Congressional congressperson is, since the VA is a federal entity, that's where they tell you to go start if you have a complaint or a suggestion or you want something changed.
I understand the political procedure, but you did also support Barb White, who ran against him.
I was Barb
that is your main
White
supporter.
Campaign manager. I sure did.
Okay,
I
then. So is it personal? Because we want to make is it a personal issue, or is it that he's not qualified for the
we
job?
We can't talk over each other, but I want to explain this fully because you're one of the few people on Facebook that when we put something up there, oh, you're attacking brown and black people. But yet you don't call the Star and Tribune. You don't call Alpha News. You don't call the New York Times, the Washington Post, Fox 9, WCCO. But you call us.
Well, they don't have a blog talk
asking,
show. Well, they don't actually. They don't have a blog talk
they're
show.
They're bigger than us.
They don't reach out to me in advance to tell me to call in, and so that's why I call in because I'm told to call in.
We're posting the information from. We're not generating this information. We didn't try to get his divorce records unsealed, but it's news and it's interesting. And as a blog talk radio show in the Twin Cities, that's a news item.
Are you educating the people on who's running, or are you just point to one specific person? And because of your experience with them, you're going to dedicate your entire show every week to this individual.
Lisa, let me tell you something. The Republican candidate for like 1 or 2 years sucked. And I did not want to waste my vote, so I voted for Congressman Ellison. And I told him that at the farmer's market last summer.
One thing I wanted to point out is that we had Lacey Johnson on the show. And he's running a good campaign in the area, in North Minneapolis. And he's speaking to the black issues. And when he called into the show, I was very impressed with what he said. Previously, I had been supporting Ray Dean, but when Ray Dean ran against the sister back in the days, I was very supportive of the sister. But most of the people in our community were Team Ray Dean. It's important that we educate the community on who's running for office and those who speak to the issues of the people who live in the city, because some of them are poor. Some of them are depressed. Some of them have mental health issues, whatever they have, the issues that they have. We have a lot of candidates that are running that are on. That's going to be on the ballot in November, that we need to be more educated on them. I want to find out if you have Lacey Johnson's office, where is Ray Dean's office? Do you know where his campaign office is?
No, I don't, but we had him on the show a couple Saturdays ago. And
okay, do you think it's important for Ray Dean to have a campaign office in North Minneapolis just like Lacey? He's a Republican, a black man.
I can't say he does or does not have a campaign office in North Minneapolis. He lives in North Minneapolis, so I'm sure he has something over there, and I will definitely text him while we're talking and ask him where his campaign office is. And hopefully he'll text me back so I'll be able to announce it at some point in the show. But the thing is, here we go. It's easy to turn this into a race thing. Like, you're black-on-black crime, black-on-black hate. Oh, you don't like Keith Ellison because you're a Republican. No, it's not that I don't like Keith Ellison. It's that I had encounters with him where I would say, I respect the office of Congress for the 5th Congressional District. The man that's in there, I have tried to speak to, say hello when I'm walking by at the Urban League, and he will frown up and growl at me. And I've done nothing to him. And then you have these people that are hiding behind a computer on social media. Oh, why are you posting this? But the sources, we have a little blog talk radio show. Wait, let me finish. We have this little blog talk radio show that supplies a lot of information, but no one calls the Star Tribune. No one says anything. No one says a word or a peep when our black children are in school with all white teachers. None of the parents.
Well, if you can dedicate your show to that, something that we can address, why should we just, you're a journalist. We rely on more than one source to get our information from. And if this is one choice of what, if this is one where we're included in the conversation, then people appreciate that. So you should
well, here's what you
that
can
you're
do.
Different
you
from
can,
Star Tribune.
I would call Jacob Fry, the Pillsbury United, and the West Broadway Business Area Coalition, who all of them together got a lot of voter registration money out there put in their pockets to do what you said, to give information. We don't get paid. Actually, we pay to do this show. We don't get a nickel from anywhere to do this show. The last time we got paid for this show, Blog Talk Radio put $20 against our account because we had so many hits. They gave us, like, here goes $20, and that was like 4 or 5 years ago. And then they stop doing it.
So it's not to personally, it's not to attack the host of the show. The question is to gain information on those who are running. There's more than one person on the ballot. And when we have a lot of an umbrella of issues.
The flavor of
If I can say we have an umbrella.
Mr. Edwards and I, Lisa, we can't talk over each other. As many times as Mr. Edwards and I have given the community information, and they ignored us until it came in the white fourth estate. I mean, how many times are we going to have to do this or just get tired of it before we're just sick of it and just don't want to, you know, why should we tell these people they don't listen? You run out and give your vote to the first Democrat you see. And if you look around the neighborhood, people in North Minneapolis are not doing well. The unemployment is double digit. Across the street from Congressman Ellison's office, 91% of the people that use North Point are over 174% below the federal poverty line. And that's
so here we have Lacey Johnson. We have Lacey. He's running in this area where you talk of these issues. And he's promoting entrepreneurship. He's promoting all of these things that address those issues. But he is a Republican, and I support him. Some people would assume that some of our people are in that area, they're all Democratic. But you support the ones that address your issue and that they're there in your community every day. Not those who feel entitled to get the vote, those who work hard for that vote. It's very important that we show that. And I know that, and this is for you, Don, I know of some of the things, even going back to where we were fighting to not have the train put on Penn Avenue and a lot of things that have taken place with our schools. So I know the relationship with you and the congressman personally. And so I'm not attacking you, but my thing is with the show, how is the show being used to educate the people on who's on the ballot? And if you guys could, you know, talk about more than one person every week, then we will make a great decision on who we vote for when we go to the polls, because we don't know at this point. And it's all about we can't keep gossiping all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot of money out there to do voter education and registration. And, you know, like I said again, you know, this is news. My question was from the social media post I put up is, in the defense of Congressman Ellison, why is the Star and Tribune getting in on this request with Alpha News to read and see his divorce papers? How did the Star and Tribune all of a sudden step in and with the Alpha News? That's interesting because, you know, the Star and Tribune usually reports everything. He cannot do any wrong with the Star and Tribune. So I'm looking
at
this.
That's fair.
And saying,
if that's something that you can pick up and talk about on your show because some other journalists or news outlets is talking about it and you pick up and talk about it, that's a practice, then I understand that because nowadays journalists, all they do is copy and paste from each other's article anyway. So I understand that. I get that. That was
that's
just
been going
the question
on
that I had.
That's been going on since day
one.
And
being a background, there's a history in your background is in education. We do have a lot of elected officials that are running for the school board that we need to talk about because we have issues in our schools and we need to get people hired. So when you're talking about the unemployment rate in the state, we have a lot of open positions within our Minneapolis public schools. And that will turn around some of these numbers in mental health. We need to get some of our people of color to go and apply for some of those jobs.
I'm not too sure, but Lisa, we appreciate the call. And you're always welcome to critique us. I always appreciate you, your voice. Your voice is one that needs to be heard a little bit louder. And, you know, like I said, I would probably call Jacob Fry, Mayor Fry, the mayor of Minneapolis. And Twin Cities are that United Pillsbury Communities, whatever it's called. Call them and ask them what are they doing with the voter information, the voter. Because you know what? I've really seen no well-organized debate or community conversations. Matter of fact, the last one that I think that was really good was the one that Mr. Edwards and I did at UROC for the school board, where we had all of the candidates there. We asked them 10 questions, and then we let the community ask questions, and it was professionally done. So I don't see that happening anymore. And at some point, I invite Congressman Ellison to have a conversation with us.
And because of you not seeing that taking place anymore, the confidence is low when it comes to voter turnout. And so that's what we're seeing. So we're not going to get who we want
in
there.
In closing, because we have some more calls here, in closing, here goes the deal. If Congressman Ellison wants to call this show, we won't take any calls. We'll deal with him directly, and we'll ask him the question. Okay, I understand about supporting black men and black business. I'm kind of glad he's in there, but I have not seen any significant changes. I mean, you mentioned a list of stuff. That's great, but that's cosmetic. You know, did 7,000 people get jobs during his tenure since 2006 in North Minneapolis that were underemployed or unemployed? The answer is no.
Well, no,
so
you guys talked about a group on Penn Avenue, a group of people that's buying all of the houses in North Minneapolis. And when you look at the predatory lending practices that the congressman did warn us about before those big banks were sued, before the crash, that information was out there, but people relied on Obama to save them, and they didn't pay their mortgages. So now they're out of a home, homeless, and now we have groups of people coming in buying these properties. So there was a warning, and that warning came from the congressman.
The biggest landlord in Minneapolis is the city of Minneapolis. You know,
that's right. And the city of Minneapolis, they raise an awareness. That's another story. But go ahead, finish on with the show.
A few more callers we need to get to because this is an hour show and it's 10:03. I thank you for calling. Continue to listen. I'll put you in the queue. Thank you. Caller, you're live on the air with the Ron and Don Show. What's your comment, statement, name, anything you'd like to give us?
Yes.
91.73. You're on, sir, yes.
Yes. The young lady that just called in, she sounds as if though she is suffering from Stockholm Syndrome, and she's a great fan of Keith Ellis. Okay, now, here's the problem I have with Keith Ellis. What has he done for the black community lately? Yes, when the foreclosure was going on, he didn't do anything in Congress. Oh, he can give you all the warnings in the world, but did he go to the black caucus and tell them we need to bring these people and hold them accountable? Mrs. Dean needs to do her homework and leave the alcohol alone, because she's calling in with this post-traumatic embitterment and this secret relationship that she has with Congressman Keith Ellis. She needs to be somewhere getting her some psychological help, because she sounds like she's suffering from mental health herself.
All right. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
We want to try to minimize any personal attacks. Thank you. Appreciate it, caller.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Go ahead, guys. You say we had at least four calls holding. Oh, by the way, did Ray Dean get back to you with a text message?
No, not yet.
Where is his office?
You.
That was a valid question that was posed.
Yeah,
Do you have a campaign office in North Minneapolis?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I just texted me, hasn't got back with me, but we will find out for sure. You know,
all
some
right.
people
we'll
I knew
we'll
that.
Do that for Miss Dean. Go ahead, get the call in. Let's get him in. That's what it's all about. Talk
okay, that was the rest of them. Ms. Edwards, the other ones want to be in the queue. And they showed up here on the caller screen. They must have hit the one button that put them in front of me on the studio display. But they want to be in the queue. So I did take that last one there who actually wanted to talk. So
let's do this. You know, I hear the conversation about the quality of life, and that's really what it is. I hope that we would have the same kind of vociferous conversation with regards to the new Department of Corrections facility, the former St. Olaf rest home, that beautiful campus up there on 29th and Fremont and Emerson. You know, I wish that some of the folks would have called in support of former council member Natalie Johnson Lee, who went down a couple weeks ago with the Lisa Delgado, if I'm not mistaken, and raised some serious questions to the planning committee. And ultimately it caused or forced our school board member, who sits as a member of the planning commission, to delay for 60 days the sale of the St. Olaf campus to a white group for $1 million less, Donnie, than a couple of black ministers had offered. They offered $2 million. The city and St. Olaf specifically turned them down and gave it to the white folks for $1 million. I wish we'd have gotten that same kind of passionate reflection and et cetera from some of our callers with regards to St. Olaf, the St. Olaf facility there. That's going to be made into a 200-bed facility for early release felons and et cetera, and all they have to do is just walk down the street to the Thor construction building and meet with their probation officer, and that was some of the discussion about a year and a half ago with the county. I really wish that people would have gotten in and supported that Natalie Lee when she and a very, very small group confronted the city of Minneapolis about the sale of the St. Olaf facility there in North Minneapolis. We're going to have a lot of, and primarily white, too, because, by the way, for those that say they, you know, want us to give them information and keep them abreast, we actually pointed this out two programs ago. The headquarters of the group, the White Development Real Estate Group, is right there at 35th and 10th. And that guy's name is Robert Johnson. But go ahead, Don. Okay. Any questions?
If you've
got any questions on that, give us a call. But go ahead.
Yeah, that number again is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And these callers, these people, these listeners, and these people hiding behind the computers, you know, I mean, you can ask us. We'll tell you the best way we know how. But also, you have to keep track of what's going on in your community. We're not privileged to a lot of information or the little groups and cornerstones that are getting this voter registration, voter education money. And I have no idea what they're doing. You know, I see no physical output other than them going out campaigning for the DFL. And Ms. Dean has mentioned something about Lacey Johnson. Well, Lacey Johnson, his message has been consistent. He says, I'm not trying to turn you into Republican. I just want you to vote for me in this black neighborhood. And he said on
his
website.
And he does have a campaign office right there on West Broadway, correct?
West Broadway, right there. He said
he was on this program. Actually, he was on our old Wednesday night program. That's what he said. So Lacey Johnson has a campaign office right there on West Broadway, right in the heart of, quote-unquote, the black economic development of the African Americans, according to the mouthpieces for them. What else we got, Don? We got so much is actually happening in community, if you will. Some discussion. Let me do this because people have been, you know, always say to us they want to hear information, news, and update. A peculiar thing happened at the last school board meeting this past Tuesday in North Minneapolis at the Davis Center, and that was on Tuesday. A person who we had attempted to get on the program to explain what was happening at Harrison, the Harrison facility, the Harrison disciplinary facility. This individual is an elected public official sitting on the park board. He was an employee at Harrison when there was some serious and violent problems, if you will, including a Liberian by the name of Mr. Dookie, who was almost beat to death. But anyways, the individual in question announced that he was resigning from Harrison and accepting a job with his union. But this comes at a time when apparently the court has decided to reduce the penalty and the sentencing of the young Caucasian neo-Nazi who assaulted three individuals, including the park board member, a white female teacher, and Mr. Dookie, if you will. You know, so just kind of, you know, bringing people up here on the most recent situation, if you will. Go ahead, Don. Don looks like he may be getting a text message.
Yeah, I'm right
from
here,
somebody.
Lewis. I apologize, but I was just chime right in on that. Is that there's a problem with the flow of information in our community to our people, and that's been going on for a long time because they think it's easier, and I'm low hanging fruit, or we're low hanging fruit when I post the show and talk about the things we might or might not talk about during this short hour. And they'll pick one thing. They'll pick one thing. But when New York Times or Star Tribune comes out with something on the same topic, they won't say anything to the white Fourth Estate at all whatsoever. And they'll just tell me, oh, you're being mean and you're angry because you posted this. You don't like Keith Ellison. You're a Republican, this and that. And I'd have to say I think that this show is more objective than any cable news network or newspaper in the United States. I think we do give the opportunities for both sides to have an opinion. I mean, you're on the right, and I'm on the right, and we sit here and we do this show. We have our conversations. We invite people to call in and chime in on what we're saying.
All
lines
are wide open.
That's
right.
They're
that's
wide
right.
open.
All lines
so,
are wide open.
I mean,
there's been times
issue,
when we've gone for an hour and a half. Yeah, beg people to call in, raise questions, and et cetera. But, you know, that was a good dialogue between you and the young lady in question, if you will. She raised some questions, and, of course, we, as good journalists, are responding and updating people with regards to what has happened. Example, the Harrison situation. It would be most interesting to find out why the charges have basically been dismissed against the young neo-Nazi who plummeted, beat almost to death three individuals, one a Caucasian woman, two black males, if you will. And by the way, there was another individual who showed up at the school board meeting who indicated that he had been attacked and beaten. And also my good friend, Ken Foxworth, who former University of Minnesota football player, longtime activist, and et cetera, has retired from the Minneapolis Public Schools as an employee because of a beating. And Ken Foxworth is in pretty good shape. A beating he received, an ambush attack there a year and a half ago. And I know that some of the people that have come in, knew about the attack on this Worth as an example, and he suffered physical conditions, mental conditions that caused him, as did the park board board member who quit his position at Harrison to take a job with the union. So, you know, we just try to keep the information flowing, Donnie. Okay, what we got? Yeah. Let me call.
I'm checking right now. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. You can give us phone lines are wide open. Mr. Edwards, I'm a little bit set back because I know that you're probably one of the oldest living historians here in the Twin Cities, and I keep seeing these historical events talking about riots at the U, riots over North, you know, and things like that. But I never see your name in any of it. And then when I look at the people that are leading these type of things, they were either not born or didn't live in Minnesota. And so how is that?
You're
credible?
Absolutely correct. And they had that yesterday also at the Davis Center. There was at 3:30 yesterday. They gave the wrong time intensely, I do believe. Two individuals talked about the – and let's talk about it for just a moment, Mr. Allen. We've got time. They were talking about the uprisings in 1967, the 51st anniversary. I don't know why they didn't do it last year, the 50th anniversary. And I happened to talk to a person that was there that has no axe to grind. In fact, they didn't move to Minnesota until 1986. They are from the islands, if you will. In fact, I think they're from your ancestral islands, Mr. Allen, Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
But they were telling me some of the statements that were being made by two individuals, one who wasn't even born in 1967, and another who, you know, information wasn't really as tight as it should have been. But to your specific question, you know, I am considered, I was at a big event. In fact, it's on the front page of the Spokesman Recorder, the Voices of the Civil Rights Movement. But what I have basically been told is that I am persona non grata. And in other words, that the white folks basically have told them that we do not want to hear the historical perspectives, knowledge, and et cetera that Mr. Edwards has. And I understand it. I mean, I understand, to embrace the truth. Because one of the things that was in the discussion yesterday at the Davis Center is that both of the speakers made sure that they stayed away from the friction between the Jewish community and the African-American community during that particular period of time. And the fact that there are still many Jews that carry animosity against the Negro community for what they consider to be an attack on Jewish commerce and et cetera. Though the Jews never talk in terms that they paid young African Americans to come in, break in their places, and burn them down, but only after the products, the supplies, and et cetera had been removed. And that's a fact, if you will. So if you're going to have a depiction of history, first of all, know your facts, know your subject matter, and number two, three, and four, be honest. You know what I'm saying? So appreciate the observation, Don. I never expect to be called to really serve on a panel or to speak directly as it pertains to the history of the uprisings of the actually, as early as 1959, and some of the names. But people couldn't even tell you who the mayor and the chief of police and others were in that, let's say, that those events of 1967, because that was actually year three, because there had started to be battles starting in 1964, 5, 6, 7, and the final one really was 1968. In April, on the occasion of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and the rest of what was left of Plymouth Avenue got burned down. So, you know, but hey, you know, no one's really interested in the history. I understand that, and what has happened now, the white folks have basically crafted and are articulating what aspects of history we should be talking about. I hate to say it like that, but it's a fact.
Yep, you're absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards. I mean, 1968, I was 7 years old, and I don't even remember any of that. I think my mom and dad might have talked about it, but, you know, I was interested in other things at 7 and 8 years old, of course. And so, I mean,
absolutely
good.
And yes, in your family, I knew your uncles. We worked together on civil rights issues and et cetera. You had uncles that were in, as I was, were in their middle 20s, late 20s, who knew the history and et cetera. And so I would, with all deference and respect to her mother and father, definitely knew about the conflict of the 1960s. But like I said, I go all the way back to, you know, 1955, 56, 57. And when we formed PEP, People Employing PEP, People Employing People, and picketed the Minneapolis Athletic Club, I will remember that. I was approached by one of your leaders here a couple months ago who indicated they wanted me to sit with a group of individuals and help those individuals craft the appearance of being historians. Again, I repeat, craft the appearance of being historical giants and et cetera. So I said to this particular individual, that's all well and good, so I need you to handle me like you'd handle a white person, and here's a figure on a piece of paper. This is what I will require per hour. I ain't heard nothing back from that Negro said. But go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a huge problem when we come to the history of this city and the continuation of this obstruction with no remedy for poverty, education, housing, employment, and all the stuff that we've been complaining about even before we started doing this show in 2008 or 2009. And so, I mean, how much information can you give these people before they decide that they want to do something to change your life? And in part of it,
Don, that is an excellent question. I appreciate, as far as the Don and Ron team, I appreciate that statement. How much more do you expect when you're being cascaded with all of this information, knowledge, documentation, and such? You said something earlier. If the white media or white folks don't authenticate it, then it's not authenticated, if you will. And to me, as a historian, that is insulting.
Yeah, if it doesn't come out of there first, it's not real if we say it, or it's just second-class information, basically. And that's something that we've dealt with. But also, Mr. Edwards, let's look at the some of the black newspapers that come out. I brought my children in the studio. If you hear some kids in the background, they're with me in the studio today to get a little education. But
okay,
like when we look at our black newspapers, with the exception mostly of the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, one of the oldest black businesses here in the state of Minnesota. Next to Estes, of course, Funeral Home in North Minneapolis, who's been like celebrated here with their state of the art thing. But getting back to the black media, I see a total abandonment of objectivity when it comes to what's happening here in the city, and it's no different year after year after year, especially election years. Now, I like the Insight News, I like the Spokesman Recorder, but I can only use one of them for information. And I'm not going to insult either one of them, but I'm just going to say I can only use one of them for information. And the other one, you know, it seems like this is what's happening. This is the agenda we want to put out. And I think that's unfair. And the white media is no different. I listen to NPR, and we know that the news is supposed to be objective. You're not supposed to have your personal bias or opinion. But when you listen to these stations, they talk about President Trump. They talk about, well, they don't talk about the black community, of course. And so everything's a negative, or he's crazy, or he's this. I mean, that's cool. That's what they want to do. But news is not news anymore. It's turned into style from these major outlets. And as Denzel Washington says, who can be first? Who can get it out there first? Forget the facts. Like that boy got shot, the young man, they got shot in Texas by that white police officer. You know, the only thing the news media could put out is that they found marijuana in his apartment. Well, damn, that lady shouldn't have been in his apartment in the first place. You know,
and by the way,
saying,
I have associates and friends in the Dallas Police Department. That marijuana, that was untrue. That was conjured up by the initial investigators. The chief of the Dallas Police Department is an African-American female, and she is no nonsensical. That was absolutely untrue. There was no marijuana in the brother's apartment, and you put your finger on it. And by the way, there wasn't a real national discussion as it pertains to that. You know, what the heck was she doing And how did she have an access and a key to his door? Because if you really follow the case, as I have, the door to all the apartments in that building, it was a real new building, have extra strength springs. And so, in other words, it's like, you know, when the door closes, the door locks. So that white female officer, who, by the way, was fired by the black chief with the concurrence of the mayor there in Dallas, she really didn't have an explanation about what it was that that caused her to go to his apartment. She knew it was, and the reason is there's a different color coding in the hallway. Uh-oh, look out. And so if you lived on the fourth floor, yours would maybe be the blue. If I lived on the sixth floor, mine would be orange. You know what I'm saying? But the marijuana thing, that was fake, if you will, and it was done in a desperate attempt to discredit the young Jamaican. In fact, I'm sorry, he actually was from the island. But it didn't work, and a grand jury apparently had also handed down an indictment against her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
I'm glad you brought that one up, Don. Glad you brought that one up.
When you just explain what you explain is that, how are people in the United States that read the news so dumb? How did they get to the point where they can't figure this out? Okay? You know what apartment you live in. For God's sake, how are you going to walk in a building? And she already said she wasn't drunk. And even if you're drunk, you know where you live in a multi-unit apartment building. Okay?
That's right.
How did we become so ignorant and stupid that we can't follow the breadcrumbs on this that, you know,
and
we're
keep
asking
in mind, each of those apartment doors has the number of the apartment.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then people were asking, saying on social media, well, she probably just made a mistake. How the hell you make a mistake? The keys are not universal in apartment buildings. You just can't go into any apartment.
That's right.
See?
That's right. As I said
and you're looking at this,
given the design of the door, when that door. See, initially she tried to say that the door was cracked. That's what alerted her to draw her weapon. Doors in those apartments, you can't crack them. As I said, they have what are a universal springs, and when those doors close, they close. Now, if you put something in between the door and the frame, you can hold it open, but you can't hold the door open based on the fact that it closed. She used a key. She initially, her initial statement to the investigators was that she used a key, which then raised the question, what was she doing with a key to his apartment? Now, she definitely did not indicate that they had any kind of romantic relationship, right? But you said something earlier. Now, she did admit later that she had been out at the club with some white officers, fellow white officers, and they had been drinking, okay? But remember what I also said to you. All those hallways are color-coded, okay?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, but whatever happened, she was fired and has been charged with second-degree murder.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay, well, that's good for her. She shouldn't have walked into the brother's apartment and shot him and killed him, you know. So,
that's right.
We have a lot of things bubbling up and happening, but, you know, we haven't had any police shootings here in Minneapolis in a couple of weeks. And the people from... all the way back.
Yes, Don, but let me say this to you because we're close to going on air because that's another issue and that one caller chastised us to some degree, particularly with the target with Jewish black Republican. But we've got a real problem with regards to trauma and et cetera inside of the Minneapolis Police Department, and it's kind of sad because money had been set aside to deal with the trauma, and that is that we've had a police officer commit suicide in the last 6 days. We've had an officer admitted to a facility, if you will, for mental stress, and we had a black lieutenant who was required to retire. Just about a month and a half ago, everybody's trying to, out of respect to him, trying to keep it quiet. A black lieutenant, his situation had become so bad, he was walking out into the back of the precinct and trying to communicate with Captain Kirk. I mean, really, this, seriously, I'm not trying to be funny. And he was forced into retirement. So we've got real problems across the board, and there's about $750,000 of grant money that can't be accounted for, and the Police Federation and the police are really ticked off, and it's really unfortunate because there's going to be some black folks that are going to have to answer what happened to that money. Okay?
Okay, we have 20 seconds left in the show. We'd like to thank everybody.
All right, take us home, man, whoever it is.
Saturday,
same
bad time.
James Brown or whoever it is. All right, talk to you later, Miss Allen.
Okay, bye-bye.